Good morning. It was almost 17 years ago that I was paged as the on-call chaplain at Rex Hospital to visit with a patient who, his nurse said, was dealing with loss issues. She whispered to me before I walked into his room that he was so grumpy and quiet, she thought he might have mental issues. He was listed as an Episcopalian and attended an Episcopal church in the area. When I first entered his room, he did not want me there at all. I was going to take my leave as he requested, but a remarkable change of events occurred that kept me rooted to the spot. He was brusque at first, but his real spiritual issues were beginning to emerge. When he said he would like me to say a prayer before I left, I said a silent prayer to God to help me find the right words. I felt that something important might be hanging in the balance. Here is a little of how our conversation went. I introduced myself and said, "Your nurse just paged me that you would like to speak with a chaplain." He replied, "No, I didn't ask the nurse to page you. I don't need to speak with the chaplain. As a matter of fact, I don't approve of you. You're a woman, and I don't think women should be involved in this type of activity. I'm certainly not a chauvinist, but I think women are better utilized elsewhere. I mean no offense to you." I said, "I'm sorry for the misunderstanding with the nurse, and believe me, I take no offense at your belief that women should not be in the ministry. But we have both male and female chaplains here at Rex. I guess God doesn't look at our gender when we receive a calling to this type of ministry. But I can understand your feelings. As long as I'm here, may I ask how you are doing today?" The patient said, "I may be a very sick man. At least that's what the symptoms point to at this time." I said, "I'm sorry to hear that. Would you like to talk about it?" He said, "No, I don't have any use for religion anymore. I used to attend," and he named the Episcopal church in the area, "and all they talked about was social issues. No one worries about your soul anymore." There was the key. He evidently had been dealing with spiritual issues for some time, but was not open immediately to discussing them. But his inner turmoil brought us into dialogue about his disappointment with the Episcopal church he attended. But that was only the tip of the iceberg. I think because of his illness, he was concerned about his relationship not only with the church, but more importantly, with God. He obviously did not want to talk about his illness. I tried to draw him out, but soon just let him lead the conversation. I was surprised that he wanted to continue with any type of dialogue and felt that this was an important encounter, and found myself listening a great deal of the time. I think he was actually glad to have the opportunity to express his dissatisfaction with someone who would listen. Our conversation became more open as the time wore on. I was indeed shocked when he told me he wished I would come back for another visit. Maybe, just maybe, he might have changed his mind a little bit about a woman in the ministry. I discovered many layers to this patient's story. I think his gruffness was a protective coating as he hid his inner turmoil. And because of that, I think he had been misunderstood. No one had taken the time to really listen to his story. The nurse had labeled him as perhaps having mental issues, when I believe he was metaphorically thirsting for something he might not even have realized he needed. Perhaps a cool drink of living water. There is a lot said about water this morning, as we heard that same request in today's gospel story. Jesus asked the Samaritan woman for a drink of water. And because I find her so fascinating, I'd like to take a closer look at just who this Samaritan woman is, who Jesus is speaking with at the well. And perhaps, like my patient, she too has been misunderstood and longed for what she didn't know she needed, a cool drink of living water. The conversation with her is the longest conversation recorded in the New Testament between Jesus and anybody. There has to be something in this story more important than how many men she has known. So by what right do we immediately suspect promiscuity and blame the woman? As it turns out, the theme of promiscuity in this passage may still be relevant if we consider it to be metaphorical rather than physically true. When we open ourselves up to this possibility, we can see that the woman's five marriages are likely a reference to the multiple gods that were worshipped by the five nations. So Jesus' reference to the woman's five husbands was a direct criticism of the Samaritans fusing different systems of belief together. When the Samaritan woman comes to recognize the Messiah, we can understand her conversion to be authentic, because we know she is not overly meek or naive to persuasion. Instead, she shows herself to be a willful woman of faith. She is certainly unwilling to let a strange Jewish man insult the faith of her people and accuse them of worshiping what they do not know. When Jesus says that her people do not know what they worship, she quickly responds, "I know the Messiah is coming, the one who will reveal all to us." Until this point, if we believe that Jesus' reference to the woman's five husbands was symbolic of the gods of the five tribes and not about her particular living situation, we can see a new and critically important feature. Jesus was not the prophetic one. On the contrary, through his interplay with the Samaritan woman, she emerges as the prophetic one, the one who is ready to recognize the Messiah. And so it happens. As soon as she asserts her readiness, Jesus tells her, "I am he." And in verse 26, Jesus reveals himself for the first time in the Gospel of John as the Messiah. And he reveals it directly to a woman of a rejected people. Jesus breaks open boundaries in this conversation with the Samaritan woman, the boundary between male and female, and the boundary between chosen people and rejected people. After she realizes Jesus is the Messiah, she is depicted as a preacher, one who brings others to meet Jesus. She went back to the city and talked to the people about her experience with the Messiah. Many Samaritans from that city believed in him because of the woman's testimony. That's the high point of the story, the believers. And it all got started when she believed, and when she told the others of her belief. And so this woman, This Samaritan woman, who is often referred to as being promiscuous, is an early disciple and truly brought many to faith. Amen.